Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. Stay ahead of all the big games in the best league in the world, the Premier League. With the latest odds, form guides, expert opinions and more, the fans are the players at Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus, begambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
Game Day, Premier League preview show.
Season's greetings from the TalkSport Game Day preview. Hello, I'm Sam Matterface, and this week TalkSport prepares to bring you every single match from the festive fixture list as we unwrap our 10 games of Christmas. Tepid Tottenham look to bounce back on Boxing Day from a blue Christmas as they start things off against bruised Brighton, who have had a tricky winter. I'll be there, and I'll also be hot-footing it on some version of Santa's sleigh to get to Leicester against Liverpool at 8 o'clock, which might be the last chance anyone has to stop the Reds from winning the whole thing with tiny tingly Christmas bells on. We've got Arteta's first game, Ancelotti's debut, and after Solskjaer slipped at the Vicarage, Brucey brings Christmas Carol to Old Trafford. Every team, every game, live across the TalkSport network. It's top of the tree and totally free. The 10 games of Christmas previewed on TalkSport's Game Day Preview podcast. Yes, all that's missing is a partridge in a pear tree. But we do have Paul Parker, the former Manchester United fullback. Hello, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you as well, Sam.
And you've got a cracker with you, haven't you?
Do you mean me or the actual cracker? No, okay. No. I thought it was a compliment for me for a second there.
No chance of that. You don't get that,
We
Tom.
Do have Tom Rennie, TalkSport's international editor and resident West Ham whiner as well. Why don't you two pull that cracker? And you may well get 3 points for West Ham United, Tom. You never know.
Oh, we didn't even get the satisfying Bang. Pop of this cracker. No, we really didn't do that very well at all.
No, we didn't.
Is this your first Christmas?
You can tell the rugby boys left those for us.
They are very rugby. These are money crackers here. Look at that. What the hell I've got here? That's good. You don't get this in the world of football. This is not a soccer cracker.
Yeah.
It's all corduroy.
No, right, okay. Thank you very much for your company. Paul, you put your hat on. Make sure you make yourself merry. We'll get on with the first game that we're going to look at today. Leicester outfoxed by City the game before Christmas. But wait till you see what's next down their chimney.
And it's Firmino coming forward. Firmino here, surely to win it. He scores! It could be a history-making goal for Liverpool.
Flamenco got sent here from their continent or their country with a clear order to win it and to come back as heroes. We got told, stay at home and play the Carabao Cup.
And there's a chance to play it forward. And Vardy's in behind Fernandinho, into the box, taking on the goalkeeper. Heavy touch, but then lifted it over Ederson and puts it into the back of the net. And the Foxes are flying forward again.
It's a totally different type of game against Liverpool, playing a different way. And, but equally have top-class players. So for us, we'll relish that opportunity to bounce back and look to get a performance at home and hopefully get a good result.
Leicester didn't really have their usual snap, their usual intensity against City. And when I spoke to Brendan Rodgers afterwards, gents, he was pretty impressed with the way that Manchester City played, but he was also really disappointed with the way his team performed. Could that help actually fire Leicester up for a big performance against Liverpool, Paul?
I'm going to turn around and say yes, that has to, because Leicester were disappointing. The game against Liverpool is a big game for him. I thought there was, in a certain way, cheated at Anfield, what happened to them with the penalty decision that went against them when they were there. They were taking the game to Liverpool. And I think they'd be looking to try and get themselves back in the hunt, I should say.
Liverpool are relentless, though, aren't they, Tom? You know, they've had a lot of travelling to do. I don't know whether that's going to affect their performance or not. But when you look at the actual schedule over the course of the next few matches, they've got the more rest than anybody else.
Jurgen Klopp is a genius, a manipulative genius of Johnsonian proportions, because what he's been able to do is take his team to Qatar for 10, 12 days, and they played Monterrey, nothing game. Certainly a tough game against Flamengo, but they've had one game in that period. They managed to skip the Carabao Cup, which they weren't interested in anyway. They managed to skip the game against West Ham, which means they had a nice big break from the league. And apart from that one game, they've been in five-star luxury. And the weather's been so bad, they couldn't go outside. So they're inside their five-star hotel, masseuse whenever they want, beautiful food. I mean, it's been a fantastic break away. It's the kind of winter break they've been moaning about for years and years wanting. This is a masterstroke, not only because of that, but also you ask a Liverpool fan, how do you feel about this break mid-season? How do you feel about throwing the Carabao Cup? They'll tell you, we had to do it. Don't worry about it. Anyone else throws a tournament, the fans are livid. Liverpool fans are seemingly delighted it's happened. And it's totally understandable. But I think Jurgen Klopp is a genius for the way he's managed to get away with this.
So it's a massive thing.
Paul, has he forgotten that they are world champions here, Paul?
We don't really want to mention that, but we just want to talk about the winter break. Because I think it's great. The thing now is win the Champions League and you get a winter break. Don't moan about it. Go out and win it. It means go out and spend a bit of money, get your team right, win the Premier League, win the Champions League, and then you'll get 9-10 days in somewhere nice, maybe.
I can't believe you two are trying to dress up what was a victory for the Premier League, for Europe, to crown Liverpool the champions of the world as some sort of easy winter break. I mean, first of all, it rained in Doha.
Yeah.
That's how bad the weather was. And that never happens. And it is when they play on Boxing Day, it will be their 31st game of the season. These two sides are the best counter-attacking sides in the league. But the first game actually wasn't really like that. Leicester scored late on. It was their only shot on target, actually. And Liverpool got that 90th-minute penalty thanks to a bit of VAR and James Milner converting it. They are the two best defences in the league. How do you actually see the game going?
I've got a feeling it's going to be, a draw. At the worst for Leicester, I'm going to say a draw. Because I really do think that they can go and win that game. I think they haven't really been interested in Vardy up against Van Dijk, how Van Dijk deals with Vardy. Is he going to try to out-muscle him? The problem is that Vardy doesn't like being muscled by anybody. He's still got that inbred side of non-league football. He's hungry. He doesn't allow anyone to push him over. He won't go and throw himself to the floor. He's going to want to prove his strength. So it'd be interesting him. Can Van Dijk match his pace? And now he's got a little bit more guile in his game because of Brendan Rodgers. Brendan Rodgers has definitely improved Vardy as a footballer. He's improved Leicester as a team. They're a better footballing side and they've got a few more strings to their bow to the team that won the Premier League.
Do they need to set a trap for Jamie Vardy in the way that Man City did second half in the game at the Etihad, but not first half? First half, City tried to do their high line. Harvey Barnes, great pass, caught them out. Jamie Vardy, great finish. Probably should have scored two in that first half. Second half, City. It was almost like watching Antonio Conte's championship winning team at Chelsea. They got the win in the first half in 2-1. And then drop deep and try to stop their main threat of attack. Do Liverpool need to do that? Will they do that? Will there be a plan for Vardy? Or do they do their usual thing?
And you mean saying score late and win games?
Yeah, that as well.
It's a great trait, that is. And they're not just getting...
You used to have it at Manchester United, if I remember rightly.
Yes, they were. Yeah, we were like that. But I'll tell you what, we wasn't kind of dominating games or in control of games as what Liverpool are. Liverpool, the way they've done it, you think to yourself, well, yeah, you've grinded that. You deserve that. It isn't by luck, is it? There's a lot to it because they've done it so many times.
Interesting that you talk about the way that Manchester City managed that game in the second half against Leicester, because they did the same thing against Chelsea after going behind, and they've done that a couple of times. But Leicester, they disappointed because they didn't have that intensity. They lost against Manchester United earlier in the campaign. They failed to beat Chelsea when they went away there as well. These big games, Tottenham apart, they haven't really been able to punch the weight that they look like they have because they're second in the table, if that makes any sense.
Sam, you were there.
They need a big scout.
Let me ask you about that game last week because it was so interesting, the way the game unfolded. And what I thought was interesting was that Leicester, for the first time this season, and I wonder if you agree, looked overawed by the occasion of the game. They looked nervous. After 20 minutes, the game plan kind of fell apart. Maybe it was City being fantastic. Maybe it was them realising, hold on, we actually are the chief challengers to Liverpool. And there was a little wobble mentally there. Did you see that?
I thought they were a young side. They got a little bit thrown by the... I thought Chilwell and Soyuncu played poorly in that game, to be honest with you, both of them. Soyuncu for the final goal, where he just seemed to step out of the way of Kevin De Bruyne, who went past him far too easily, was allowed to whip that ball through the six-yard box, and it was an easy finish for Gabriel Jesus. I think there was too much space for Riyad Mahrez on that left-hand side. It was a tactical masterclass from Pep, because he got De Bruyne and Mahrez into a position where it was very difficult to mark both of them. So one of them always seemed to be free. And that was really, I think it was a feather in the cap of Pep Guardiola. Mm. He was very, very happy afterwards. And he's never very, very happy. But he came bounding into the little interview room, big smile on his face. I said to him, I sense that you're quite proud of your team's performance today. And he went, oh, yes, 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 yes. I mean, he did walk off after about 2.5 minutes, but that's neither here nor there. 2.5 minutes with him is actually quite a achievement, I've got to admit.
Sam, do you think he learnt as well something from what happened against Manchester United on that defending side, on the fact of their counter-attacks in that first 25-30 minutes?
I just think Manchester United were better at it than Leicester were, and I think that they were actually better, that they made less mistakes at the back than Leicester did. Leicester made a lot of mistakes at the back, and they can't afford to do that against Liverpool either. I do actually think that I agree with you. I think this will be a draw, this game. The reason I think it will be a draw is because I think ultimately, Liverpool aren't going to go through the whole season not winning every single game. Leicester are probably the type of team that look back on that performance against Manchester City and be fired up and be thinking to themselves, we've got to make our mark here. Mm. And in order to do to give themselves any sort of semblance of a chance of making the title race interesting, they need to win here. I don't think they'll do that, but I do think they'll get something from the game.
I can't get over that Antonio Conte side in my mind, thinking about this Liverpool side, because of the great lead they have at this point. The only team to lead by as many as 10 points on Christmas Day and not win the title was Newcastle back in 95, the infamous Keegan blow-up and all that. And what that Conte side did so impressively was get the league won and then realise, right, if we don't lose four times in the ensuing 19 games, we are champions. And I just wonder, because every Liverpool game this season has been so tight, it's been so tense, it's been so engaging to watch, even if the quality of football hasn't quite been there. I wonder if there will be a point now-ish where there'll be a change of mentality. There'll be a change of, well, let's not push the fullback so far forward. Let's play that Champions League midfield, which is a lot more holding when it's Wijnaldum, Henderson and Milner, and not see the more attacking talents in there. I wonder when that might be, and maybe in this game is a good place to start it.
One of the big problems they've had, though, is that Fabinho has been injured, and he was a key part of that midfield, especially earlier in the season. So without him, they've rotated that position amongst Milner, Henderson, Keita, Wijnaldum, tried to double pivot at certain times as well, and it hasn't necessarily given them the same level of control that they have when they've got Fabinho in there. Well, he won't be available on Boxing Day evening, but Liverpool are unbeaten in 5 straight league games with Leicester. If they extend that, then 2020 is going to be very red indeed.
I think to set targets at the moment is not what I would like to do. I would like to take it day by day. We have a lot of things to do. What is clear is the ambition of this football club are very clear. You have to be in Europe, you have to fight for trophies, and the rest is not good enough. It's as simple as this. But now to talk about this is a little bit far. I would like to talk about what we're going to be doing tomorrow in the game, win on the game, leave the moral of the team, and then Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, go to Bournemouth, start winning again.
Ah, Mikel Arteta's first game in charge of Arsenal is away at Bournemouth, bearing in mind that they kept a clean sheet away from home in his first game, in which he had just at least a passing interest, even if he wasn't officially the manager. Can we expect him to park the bus at Bournemouth? After all, the Cherries, Paul, I mean, they only beat the big ones, don't they? And then their last two victories have come against Chelsea and Manchester United.
Well, I'm sure then they're going to lift themselves the game at home. And you have to lift yourself when you're playing Arsenal, because you've got to believe you're going to win a game of football. Maybe the one bonus is that we won't get a bad game as the last game. Because there was nothing good about it.
Well, they saved the worst game of 2019 awful. Until the penultimate week, didn't they?
Yeah.
Hideous game of football.
It was terrible. And then they're sitting there with the people waiting to come in. I wonder if they had a get-out clause. They couldn't have done, could they? Because they're still there for the upcoming
but
game.
But Arteta can say things can only get better, right? That's great for him. You want the first game when you're in the stands to be awful, because everything else from that point will be better. It simply couldn't be worse, could it?
it was dire. The only thing he got out of it is that he saw a few young players play. That's what he's got out of it. He's got to make big decisions on what's, you know, about his defence. When they're fit, he's got to pick the right ones. His midfield, he's got to turn that midfield into something that can produce. Saying it's only them and Manchester United must have the two worst midfields in the Premier League. Totally industrious with no creativity or improvisation. And then you look up front and you think to yourself, hold a minute, I've got a centre-forward who doesn't want to be here anymore. And I've got one sitting on the bench that doesn't want to be here anymore because he just comes off the bench. He's gone into a nightmare, hasn't he?
Yeah.
It's their worst performance, I think, in the league at this stage since 1983. And December 1983, do you know what was in the charts? What music we were listening to in December 1983?
Shawaddy
Waddy. No.
83, is that too
Thompson
late?
Thompson Twins.
Don't know.
Hold Me Now. Slade, My Oh My.
Oh, yeah.
Love of the Common People by Paul Young. The Flying Pickets, Only You. You remember that one.
I know
Slade.
That was Slade.
Like an a cappella song, wasn't it?
I know Slade. I believe in woman, my oh my. That one, but I don't know the others.
Yeah, it wasn't that one. Oh. No. Shaking Stevens, Cry Just a Little Bit. Well, certainly Arsenal fans have been crying more than just a little bit. They've only won one of the last 13 games. You mentioned that Mikel Arteta saw maybe one or two things that he would have liked from that game, but only that because it was the dullest game of the entire season. I was listening to Nigel Adderley and Trevor Sinclair, and I actually thought, how are they going to get to the end of this game? The first thing he's got to sort out, though, is the defence, isn't it? I mean, OK, they kept a clean sheet at Everton, but it is the defence. That's priority number one for Mikel Arteta. What is priority number two?
Midfield, without a doubt. They've got no creativity. They're just workhorses. In that, within that little bit there of number two is getting Ozil out. That's the big thing. He isn't going to work. He's not going to change his game. And the thing about it, he's worked Arteta with fabulous midfield players at Manchester City.
We asked the question, well, you know, what? Why did Mikel Arteta get the Arsenal job? He's never coached a team before professionally as a frontline manager. He's still in his 30s. He's a young guy. This is a huge football club, which is supposed to be one of the most successful in British football. Yet they've gone for someone who is untried and untested just because he happened to play for them a little bit a few years ago. But ultimately, maybe the question we should be asking is, did anyone actually want the Arsenal job?
Yeah.
Because it is so big. There is so much to do. There are so many challenges. It's going to be difficult for anyone to succeed at it. And I wonder whether or not that may well be actually the overarching question when we come back to it in 6 months' time and they've had a terrible end to the season. Look, I wish him all the best. He's a nice guy. I hope it works out for him. I think it's very, very difficult. Tom, you mentioned in the reports you did for us last week that Eddie Howe was under pressure for the first time. They're the opponents for Arsenal on Boxing Day. Do you really believe that?
Absolutely, I do. I think he's under pressure for his own personal career. We know that he feels, having heard Alex Crook on this programme, he feels that he is coming towards the end of his time at Bournemouth and might be looking for what he can do next, if anywhere, if there is to be nowhere. He'll sign the new contract come the end of this season and be Bournemouth manager for 25, 30 years. I'm watching a Bournemouth side right now and they are listing. They're very much like Arsenal in a lot of ways. They've got an identity which is not being imprinted out on the field. Just two shots on target in 273 minutes of football. If we want to talk about worst games of 2019, Everton-Arsenal probably wins. Second to that, probably Bournemouth-Burnley, which took place on the same day. It was an atrocious game of football. Bournemouth at home couldn't get their freewheeling, free-attacking way of playing going. Defensively, they look like they are they're in desperate need of reinforcements. Ake out. Francis, not the player he was a few years ago. And that's the same with a few players in there. I think they're due a regeneration. Does he want to do that regeneration? I have my doubts about it. I'm not sure they would ever get rid of him, but I wonder where they go next as a club if he remains there for another 2 years looking not disinterested, but I think he feels like, and I'm sure many people out there can sympathise with this, where do I go next with my career? And in front of him, there's a blank space.
Last year, between November the 3rd and January the 13th, they won 2 of 14 matches. The year before, between the 25th of November and the 20th of January, they won 2 of 15 matches. And the year before, between October and March, they won 4 of 20. They've won 2 of the last 13. The only difference really is the dip started just a little bit early. But they always go through this sort of period every single year.
Yeah.
So maybe, Paul, we shouldn't be surprised that they've had such a difficult time.
No, but still somewhere along the line, I think the newer fans of Bournemouth are wanting to see more. I really do think they want to see a little bit more. They want to see, well, more wins. They still want to see maybe bigger players coming down. People want more, and I think Bournemouth want more. The new stadium has fallen through now, so they're still in their little small one. The club needs something. It needs an oomph. It needs something to get going again. They've got an owner with a lot of money. They're not getting full value for it, to be perfectly honest.
I think to build on your point, Sam, you're absolutely right. Statistically, this is nothing new for Bournemouth. They're a streaky side. They always have been. They win a lot of games, they lose a lot of games. I think what's different is, away from the stats of watching them every week, and I've watched every one of their games this season, there is a listlessness to them. There is a lack of direction to them. I'm not sure how Bournemouth play now. I think last year we could have had a conversation about what they do. Strong on the counter-attack, the strength of Callum Wilson, playing through Ryan Fraser. These were all clear elements of what they did. This year it's not there.
But it is a side in transition because they've had to turn the squad over. They need to make it a little bit younger. So it is a squad that is going through a bit of a shift already, which is why they spent a lot of money on younger players this season. Maybe some of them haven't settled as well as maybe Eddie hoped, but ultimately they know that they need to change the outlook. They've tried to be a little bit more defensive in some games as well, and they've kept a lot more clean sheets than they have done previously. I was at the Manchester United game, and they were absolutely fantastic defensively in that. But then again, you look at Manchester United during that period and subsequently against other teams they're expected to beat, and you think maybe it wasn't that big an achievement at all. Talking of which, coming up, no Jolly Ollie Christmas for United, but first, here's Crookie the Christmas Wookie with his take on Aston Villa against Norwich.
Two of the bottom three meet at Carrow Road, and it's looking ominous for both Norwich and Aston Villa as they bid to avoid an immediate return to the Championship. It was always going to be a struggle for the home side after spending a paltry £1 million in the summer. In Todd Cantwell and Tiemu Pukki, Norwich have two players who would appear to have a future in the top flight, with or without the Norfolk club. But it's the lack of quality throughout the rest of the squad that has been Daniel Farke's undoing. Unlike their host, Villa were not shy in splashing the cash, but with only 3 points separating the two teams, manager Dean Smith must be hoping he kept the receipts for some of those big money purchases. Losing key midfielder John McGinn to injury in the defeat to Southampton will have done little to lift Smith's mood. Jack Grealish has 3 goals in his last 5 games and will once again need to be on song if Villa are to silence those canaries.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. There's a lot more to those 90 minutes than what goes down on the pitch. With the latest odds, form guides and expert opinions, you'll know the score with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18 plus, begambleaware.org, T's and C's apply.
Manchester United were ponderous and powerless at Vicarage Road, and Newcastle in the last 8 games have beaten Palace, Saints, Sheffield United, drawn with Manchester City, beat Bournemouth and West Ham, and they have already beaten United once this season. Steve Bruce needs a bit more credit, doesn't he? Newcastle have done brilliantly recently.
Definitely. People aren't talking about him, which is always good for him and Newcastle, but he's done fantastic considering that everything was against him. Everyone thinking he's walked you know, walked into a frying pan. He's put himself under pressure. He was getting grief from the fans as well, obviously, for managing Sunderland, but he went to Newcastle.
I mean, I know he looks like he's walked into a frying pan, but that's got something to do with his nose being broken about four times during his career. You mean?
Did you get that one from a cracker? Was that in your cracker at your end? Was it?
It was one of those rugby boys crackers. But it's true, isn't it? He's done fantastically well, and he's got them organised.
He has, and he mostly can't believe it. He's going to Old Trafford, and he's looking at doing a double over Manchester United. And mostly believes that he can go and do it because he'll go and play a system, play a formation, everything. His game plan will be the same as what's happened to Manchester United, other than when they play the big boys, and that is to sit deep and allow Manchester United to have the ball. As simple as that.
What Steve's done is brilliantly succeeded in making them a team that are relatively unnewsworthy. That can't be said about Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, who is going to come under scrutiny now because it's, as everyone knows, they can't do anything else than counter-attack. There's no plan B. This was the problem in the first game. United had 68% possession in that match. How do they get a result here, Tom? Because unless they change and start to get better at beating teams that sit very deep, then they're never going to get the points that they need to get themselves into the Champions League places, which is their aim this season.
I think we have come to the point where we need to start thinking about Manchester United differently. We have thought about them for so long as one of the giants of the game, top four side, all that sort of stuff. You look at their record right now. Below them, they can't beat anybody. Above them, they get really good results. They are what a lot of mid-table teams hope to be, what Newcastle hope to be. That is a really good upper mid-table side. This is what they are. It's the calibre of players they have. And the goalkeeper, of course, is only a mid-table goalkeeper these days. He's not the elite goalkeeper he once was.
Careful, Paul Parker's going to make you get a Steve Bruce nose if you're not careful.
I wouldn't be that bad.
He's a realist, Parker. He knows. He knows that I speak truth to power here. That's what's going on. They're an upper mid-table team.
You're right about David De Gea, though, aren't you? I mean, he's cost them seriously over the course of the last couple of games. I mean, the Everton mistake, I maintain, was terrible. And I thought it was, inexplicable what happened at Watford at the weekend. But the biggest problem for me was he's called it testimonial pace, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. But the lack of endeavour, desire. Not everything can hang on the shoulders of Marcus Rashford or... Not everything can be expected to be generated by Paul Pogba coming back one day and he'll save us. It'll be all right, folks. You can't operate like that, can you?
No, I mean, and that's the problem that he's got. He really, in my opinion, needs the opportunity, if they're going to do it, to get players in January and again in the summer when the summer window's open, because his three signings he have made have been the three positive things that three positive players that Manchester United have had all season. His signings have been good. They've come through for him and they've shown everything you just mentioned there, Sam. So he needs an opportunity to go and do it again.
Can I just stop that for a second? Because when it comes to transfers, right, when players come in and are bad, we always say Ed Woodward don't know what he's doing, like he's useless at his job. But when these players come good, we say, oh, well done, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. What a great job you've done. Daniel James is a great signing.
It's slightly different because this summer in particular, it is expected because of the review that Manchester United have done that the signings that have been made in coordination with the manager who is there. A lot of the signings that were made in the early part of the Jose Mourinho reign were also to do with him. It was only latterly that the club started to diverge from his plan in terms of recruitment. And I think that's where the criticism came. You're right about James, about Maguire have done very, very well for him. And I've said it before, he inherited a terrible, terrible squad, like a really bad squad. So he had to turn almost the whole thing round. He's not going to do that in one window or two windows. It's going to take three windows for him to be able to do that. If we get to the end this time next year and they're still playing like this, then I think we can legitimately say he hasn't done a very good job, because he would have had three windows to bring in maybe 9-10 players during that period, in which case they're certainly his team. How long before the pressure starts to increase on him, do you think, Paul?
I would say over this Christmas period, I think, because they've got a difficult game, that Newcastle game. I really think if any...
Because the fans are quite patient, aren't they?
The majority are, yes, but there's people out there waiting to snipe. It's Manchester United. I think if it's a lackluster performance and it's an underwhelming game and they don't get...
Lackluster?
Yeah.
Put the champagne down.
It's the strong stuff. It's the rugby boys' champagne, so you know it's good.
I think... If they don't go and get a win against Newcastle, there'll be questions throwing up again. Because you can't live off beating the big boys.
Okay, thank you very much. We should be thankful at this time of year, not only for the rugby boys leaving the Prosecco behind, but, and we certainly are thankful for that, we are thankful for Miguel Almiron's goal as well. Finally, he has one. Tottenham would be thankful for a result this Christmas too, I think.
Fantastic finish from Willian. And in this box office battle of a London derby, it's Chelsea who land the first blow. And in the battle of the benches, it's Lampard who lands the first blow to the chin of Mourinho.
Two very bad goals to concede. So one short corner is bad, and especially bad when you are so organised in relation to that. So we knew what to do and we didn't.
Well, sleepy Spurs need to wake up early on Boxing Day because they are now 6 points outside of the Champions League places and behind Wolves and Sheffield United in the table. And let's be honest, they weren't very good against Chelsea. What do they have to do differently against Brighton, Paul Parker?
Maybe get players maybe in the right mindset, in the right positions. Because I think against Chelsea, Mourinho was more concerned about Chelsea than what he was his own team. He never allowed Spurs to play as Spurs. He did it at Manchester United when he was managing there. He did it against Chelsea. He did it against big sides as well. He concerns himself with them. It's, I'm not going to get beat scenario. And as he found at Manchester United, didn't really work that way. And I think he's found that at Tottenham now because he took all the good bits away from him.
Dele Alli's gone quiet again. Has the initial bounce gone flat? And are the real problems that Spurs have got actually been exposed? Or is, as Paul said, actually the best bits have been taken out of Tottenham by Jose Mourinho?
Yeah, I think all semblance of Pochettino in just a month has been withdrawn from Tottenham Hotspur, and now they are fully becoming a modern-type Mourinho side. Paul's absolutely right. I think all they cared about was stopping Chelsea at the game on Sunday and didn't think about their own game plan. Where exactly was Dele Alli playing? I have absolutely no idea. He was sort of left, sort of 10, floating around. I wonder if Eric Dier will get more than 45 minutes, if anything, this weekend. I don't know where he's playing or why he's playing right now. Something's obviously wrong with Eric Dier in that role. We know he's had fitness issues and health issues and all sorts in recent times, but he seems like a man that needs to get taken out the fire. For this game, they're playing against a side that love possession in Brighton. Brighton love to keep the ball. They're fantastic at keeping the ball. I'm surprised at how poor their record has been actually recently, because I've watched them and thought they were very impressive. But I think it's like 5 points from a possible 21 available. And so they need something from it. I think Brighton will attack. And I think Tottenham, it's Mourinho. They are going to be cautious. They're going to try and stop Brighton.
But actually, what has been probably helping their results is when they haven't had possession, they've allowed the other team to have it, and then they've nicked goals on the counter-attack. They did that against, in the last few minutes, against Wolverhampton Wanderers when they got all 3 points the other week. You mentioned that Brighton have only won one of the last seven, but that was against Arsenal. They have also played during that run, United, Leicester, Liverpool, Wolves, and their rivals Crystal Palace in that time. So they're understandable results, aren't they, rather than the start of a tumble, you would expect, Paul?
Yeah, I mean, the difference is that Brighton are a completely different entity to what they were in previous seasons. I saw the game last season at White Hart Lane.
The Eriksen 90th minute goal in a dreadful, dreadful game. Yeah,
Brighton just tried to stay on.
I was
on
there. I commentated on that game. It was the most one-sided match I think I see all season.
It was awful. I mean, the centre-halves never come out the six-yard box. They was happy to be there. Now they're not that team anymore. They get hold of the ball. Potter's got them playing some lovely football. Everyone's enjoying it. Mourinho will
It comes with pitfalls, doesn't it? Because they haven't kept a clean sheet for a very long time. In fact, I think they've only kept one clean sheet since they kept a clean sheet in this reverse fixture in October.
Yeah, and a lot of it comes from their own mistake of trying to play out from the back. They've been caught out quite a few times, and he's trying to get players who really not up to the job, but he's saying to them, I don't care, you're going to make mistakes. And he wants them to do it, which is, I think, good in certain ways. Brighton fans are mostly happy they're seeing better football, they're getting a little bit more out of it than what they were over previous seasons. But the thing about it is that Mourinho done this at Manchester United, and he allows teams to have the ball. The difference is that United couldn't do anything about it. Spurs have the players. The problem is, how long are these players going to want to play in this fashion?
I'm, I'm slightly worried about you two because you've been quite miserable about pretty much everyone today. You won't even celebrate the achievements of the world champions. You're now looking at Mourinho. He's lost two games since he's come back into the Premier League with Tottenham against Manchester United and against Chelsea. I mean, big matches, yes, but they're the only two Premier League matches that he's lost since he's been here. And you're saying that he's filleting Tottenham. He's ruining them. Just remember where they were when he took over. They were 14th. I mean, they could have gone fourth on Sunday.
If they're going to die, they better do it and decrease the surplus population. That's very much the mood I'm in. The table means nothing. The table right now means nothing. Aston Villa in the relegation zone, 15th. 10 points above them, Newcastle in 9th. Anything can change in the space of 2 or 3 weeks. That's why the Christmas period is so good. Tottenham being in 14th, I'm not sure there was any real doubt that Tottenham weren't going to go up the table. They'll finish in the top 8, maybe top 6. That's about where Spurs are as a club. So I don't see that.
Yeah, but the question is he has improved them, hasn't he?
Where has he improved them? Did you watch the Chelsea game? There was no element of improvement.
They've won games. They've won matches. Yes, they lost against Chelsea. Yes, they lost against Manchester United.
They were chaotic in previous games before that. I'm not too sure where the improvements are. I'm not too sure there's anything any manager can do to fundamentally change DNA in that time. I think the only thing we've seen in Mourinho is his setup against Chelsea, and it was his setup against Chelsea which cost him the game. Pumping the ball forward long down the channels in the hope that Dele Alli might be goal side of the fullback is vintage Mourinho. It's vintage 2006 Mourinho, and he ain't got those players.
They've won 2 games in 8 before he turned up. They've won 5 games in 8 since he's turned up. I mean, the improvement is he's getting more points. Whether or not you can fundamentally change the outlook of that squad is a different debate, isn't it? Because ultimately, we all know that there's a lot of disinterested parties in that squad that have got their eyes on moves elsewhere. The one thing he has done is secure Toby Alderweireld for a longer-term future. I mean, somehow his desperation to get away from North London has been erased within 5 weeks of Mourinho's reign.
Let me just say, I don't think it's anything to do with the fact of Mourinho. It's a fact of more about Pochettino going. Mm. I think anyone could have come in there and he would have signed that contract. I think that's the bit that's obvious, Sam, on that one. I don't think it's...
And the cash, mate. Yeah. Like, Daniel Levy in the last month or so has gone, oh, you know that wage structure we used to do? Yeah, forget about that. Here's 150 grand a week and here's Jose Mourinho. They've thrown that all out the window. It'd have been better for them to keep the money for Pochettino than waste it on Mourinho or buy a bunch of Freds and Pogbas.
Oh, dear. It's like the last days of Gordon Brown. When the next person comes in to take over from Daniel Levy, there's going to be like 10 years of austerity at Tottenham. It's going to be a nightmare. Just quickly on Brighton. Obviously, we've mentioned that they don't keep as many clean sheets, but they don't really score enough goals for me either. If there's anyone that Tottenham should be wary of, who is it?
Well, Mopé's been fantastic, hasn't he? He is such an instinctive finisher. He reminds me a lot of Danny Ings, actually. I see a lot of similarities in those two players. They can create a chance from nowhere. They strike the football on the turn. He's a very, very good centre-forward. And if you've got a centre-forward who scores 15 goals, Paul, you're likely to stay in the Premier League. History tells us that. And he can score that many goals.
He can do, and I saw him play at Brentford, and he was very, very good at Brentford. I think injury could tell the back end of his time at Brentford, but he was always a constant threat when I saw him.
7 goals this season so far in 18 appearances for Neil Mopar. That's a pretty good return on the investment of £20 million-plus that they spent on him in the summer. Right, a London derby at Selhurst Park. Here's Alex Crook.
While the rest of the Premier League toiled away over the weekend, West Ham's players will have had their feet up at home with a mince pie, a glass of sherry, watching their favourite Christmas movies. Manuel Pellegrini seems to have been auditioning for the role of the Grinch all season, but the Hammers' crucial win at Southampton ensured this was not to be his last Christmas at London Stadium. Pellegrini will be hoping the extra few days' rest, courtesy of scheduled opponents Liverpool's involvement in the Club World Cup, will give his team the edge. But if West Ham lose this London derby, it will be the veteran Chilean left feeling home alone once more. Palace have been Scrooge-like when it comes to scoring goals after failing to find the net in 8 of their 18 Premier League matches. Only bottom club Watford are more profligate, which must be a worry for Roy Hodgson. This match also pits the two oldest managers in the division, but will it be Pellegrini or Hodgson who come out on top?
Right, the Christmas chorister is obviously otherwise engaged. So a big hello to Dream Team's Sean Cook. Hello.
Hello, mate. How are you?
Merry Christmas to you. Greetings of the season. Did you get yourself a Jose jumper or a Mourinho mug?
I'm yet to invest, but no, we shall soon see.
Did you have a good Sunday? Did you enjoy yourself?
It was quite quiet. Didn't get up too much, unfortunately. Yeah, pretty quiet in the end. How about you?
Sean is the alter ego of at Talking THFC, as well as his work for Dream Team. He's a big Tottenham Hotspur fan. And I just wonder whether or not these guys have been denigrating Jose Mourinho, basically saying that he's filleted every ounce of Pochettino out of the football club. Because I remember the first day that he was appointed, you were wiping the little tear from your eye that Pochettino had gone, but at the same time celebrating the arrival of what you called a top-level manager.
That's the thing, yeah. I mean, we didn't have a lot of time to get over it, did we? We had 12 hours between Pochettino going and Mourinho coming in, so we didn't have a lot of time to shed a tear over it, but... As I said at the time, it's the first elite appointment we've ever made.
I thought it was 2005 for a second there. What were you saying? Have I got hair again?
But there you go. It's the time will tell. Time will tell.
Wonderful sight pine back in 2005 when Mourinho was good. He had black hair last time he was elite.
Okay, let's move on to the Dream Team section of the programme because, of course, that is what you are here for. Everton-Burnley, one of the games we're looking at. Carlo Ancelotti starting life at Goodison. It's one of the games that is available via the TalkSport app as part of our 10 games of Christmas. What you got for me?
So, a tricky one. Ancelotti's first game in charge of Everton. He's not going to be able to count on Iwobi, of course. Picked up the hamstring against his former club, Arsenal, at the weekend. He's actually the sixth highest scorer on the game for Everton this season, which admittedly isn't saying much, but the 0.6% of managers who've stayed loyal to him will miss him this week. That will likely see Bernard come into the side. I mean, he's not had a great season, particularly on Dream Team, just 21 points so far. And to put that into comparison, that's the same amount of points that Declan Rice has got as a defensive midfielder. So before whacking in Bernard as your Iwobi replacement, maybe look elsewhere. But Burnley, I mean, their second consecutive 1-0 win at the weekend.
Hold on. Sorry. You basically said don't pick any Everton players. Is that the tip? Pick nobody. They're all rubbish.
Is there not any case to make that maybe Carlo Ancelotti will get more out of his fellow Italian Moyes Keane than maybe Duncan Ferguson did? But for a start, as he might not put him on and then take him off after about 15 minutes, which would probably help.
I mean, if he was in form, potentially he would have dropped in. Obviously, you've got to look at their star men this season. Richarlison, 88 points, their high scorer. Lucas Digne as well, 71. Calvert-Lewin, 58 points. So they have got some scorers there. But I wouldn't be looking at Everton players for this one. I would be focusing on Burnley. As I say, another clean sheet at the weekend. And Tarkowski has been just such a revelation for them this year. He is their highest point scorer, 59 points. I brought him into my side 2 weeks ago.
It's not sky high,
59
points.
Back-to-back 13-point weeks, though, which is nothing to be sniffed
at.
So I would be looking at the Burnley side of things. Obviously, Chris Wood there as well. Sean Dyche is obviously going to have to make one change. Hendrick is ruled out. Aaron Lennon's going to come in, most likely for him. Aaron Lennon, who's on -2 Dream Team points for this season.
Paul's face suggests he wasn't sure Aaron Lennon was still playing in the Premier League.
I'm really shocked. I'm really shocked to hear two of that name mentioned.
He came on against Spurs last week in the 5-0 defeat to an amazing response from the Spurs fans. Of course, he's a very popular boy around there, but -2 Dream Team points is really, really shocking. I mean, the other possible change there could be Rodriguez coming in, maybe being rewarded for his winner at the weekend at the expense of Barnes. He has bagged more points than similar strikers at mid-table clubs. Benteke, McBurnie at Sheffield United, St. Maximan at Newcastle. He's only £1.8 million on the game, Rodriguez. So if you're looking for that cheap option in a congested fixture schedule, maybe the man for you.
Okay, Champions League Chelsea take on the Saints. Southampton have got Danny Ings, who's scored 10 Premier League goals this season. They'll have to be wary of him. A rare clean sheet for Frank Lampard's team, though, on Sunday against Jose Mourinho's Tottenham Hotspur. But they'll have to retake, won't they, Chelsea?
Yeah, I think so. We saw Frank Lampard switch to that three at the back at the weekend. Zouma, Tomori and Rudiger. I mean, they've done okay this season. 95 points between the three of them on Dream Team. which would have come, a bit of a surprise at the start of the season. I don't think we would have seen them keeping as many clean sheets as they have. But they're obviously going to have to bring in someone for Azpilicueta, who picked up that knock. Most likely, Rhys James, who has been somewhat of a revelation himself. 50 Dream Team points already.
He's in the team.
He is more than Serge Aurier, which it pains me to say.
That's not difficult, is it? Let's be honest.
but he is quite a low risk option, as I say. He doesn't always start.
Unlike Serge Aurier.
doesn't always start, which means he often comes on when they're ahead and they've got the clean sheet in the bag, which means he racks up the points. So a little secret swap there for you if you fancy Rhys James.
Jorginho, Hudson-Odoi, Pulisic all didn't start against Spurs in a terrific display. So you would expect that those two could end up coming into the starting 11, Hudson-Odoi and Pulisic, if indeed he needs to change them.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Pulisic has been a real surprise after his start to the season. He's already bagged 90 points, which is more than the likes of Mason Mount. So a fantastic start for him, and he's been rewarded. 14.6% of managers have gone for him. Hudson-Odoi, as you say, as well, not as popular an option, but 0.6% of managers have gone for him. 29 points already. So there are points in this Chelsea side, as you say. Southampton's main threat being Danny Ings, 11 goals already.
Is there a secondary threat for Southampton? Is there a second player you can mention that might get some points?
The second highest scorer is Ward-Prowse, who's 50 points behind Danny Ings. So I think Danny Ings is obviously the obvious choice there. He's now got 106 points, which is more than Aguero, Firmino, Aubameyang. So what a surprise Danny Ings has been. I've been trying to poach him from one of my colleagues on Dream Team Draft. He's not having it just yet, but I will get my hands on Danny Ings.
Okay, Southampton have lost 8 of their last 9 meetings with Chelsea. Sheffield United have won 3 on the bounce. Now they take on the bottom side in the Premier League. Here's Alex Crook.
Santa Claus only delivers presents for good boys and girls, or so the myth goes. Chris Wilder must have been seriously well behaved this year, as even Santa himself could not have delivered a more perfect 2019 for the men from the Steel City. Promoted back to the Premier League after an absence of almost 2 decades, the Blades have made light work of the step up from the Championship, and with Tottenham and Manchester United struggling for consistency, it's them who have emerged as the nearest challengers for a place in the top four. Watford boss Nigel Pearson was quick to point out the enormity of the task facing his basement dwellers, even in the afterglow of their potentially season-changing win over United. Despite that impressive performance, Pearson still has it all to do to mastermind the greatest of relegation escapes. No team in Premier League history have had as fewer points as Watford 17 games in and survived. A win at Bramall Lane, though, would be another significant step towards Pearson and his Golden Boys rewriting history.
Wolverhampton Wanderers meet Manchester City on Friday night. They were second best against Norwich, I thought, for much of the game. Wolverhampton Wanderers on Saturday. Only a late splurge in the second half saved them, really. Now they face City, who were, I thought, absolutely imperious at the weekend. And Pep Guardiola did too. His little smiley cherubby face. There's been some corkers between these two over the course of the last few seasons. Will the extra day's rest mean that this one lives up to that sort of billing, do you think?
I don't think so, in that sense. I mean, it's going to be a good game. I don't think the rest...
Oh, great.
I don't think the respite comes into it. I just think this game is two coaches who love the football they play, got a team who's played 100 games already. People are waiting for them to fall flat in their faces, but they're showing everybody, no, we're fit, we're strong, and we've got a desire to win every game we play. They've been fantastic, Wolves. And it's going to be a really, really hard game for Man City. Great the weekend, as you saw and you've mentioned as well. But this game is going to be a really tough game for them.
It is the final match of our 10 games of Christmas. It's live on TalkSport at 7:45 on Friday night, live across the world on Premier League Live. Wolves beat them earlier in the season by sitting and hitting on the break with 2 Adama Traore goals late on. Do you think they'll pose a similar sort of threat, Tom?
I love Adama Traore. I think he's always going to be a threat. I was reading that he is amongst the top five most fouled players in the Premier League this season. Jack Grealish, 73, is top of that list. Traore, 42 times he's been fouled this season, so fourth of the top five. My question would be, how is anyone fouling Adama Traore? Like, how is it possible to stop this man?
Someone dislocated his shoulder the other week.
He just pops it straight back in, like Mel Gibson, and cracks back on to get the drug dealers. You know, classic. He's an amazing footballer, an amazing physique. And what he's done this year, and he did it at City with these late goals there, and they're great at the breakaway at Wolverhampton Wanderers, and they'll need to be in a game like this again, is that he's added the composure. Earlier when we talked about Kevin De Bruyne, and we talked about Mikel Antonio, similar sort of players when it comes to power running. When Antonio gets towards the end line, he tends to fall over, he's out of breath, he looks knackered. And that was Adama Traore until this season. You watch him now, when he gets there, he stops. He takes a breath, yeah. He looks up, he finds the right pass, or the right shot. He hadn't scored for, was it, 67, 68 games until he scored against
City.
His
end product
City.
Has got much better, and it was something that they were talking about on Match of the Day with Michael Richards. He was discussing, even at Aston Villa, in the brief time that he was with him there, you know, they said, what we used to do in training was we used to show him outside because he couldn't get across him. But over time, he learnt very quickly to get better at doing that. And he has developed. And Nuno Espirito Santo has done very well to produce what is now a lethal weapon.
Good. No, we've got to appreciate that. That was a great gag.
Sam.
So he's getting too old for this.
We're just saying that Wolves coaches have improved him. So what happened to the great Tony Pulis? Why didn't it work at Middlesbrough? Did he have enough time and patience to work with him? Because he was always on the bench, wasn't he?
Aguero coming back at the right time, maybe, with the congested fixture list, do you think? Because Gabriel Jesus has done well, but he does well in a different way, doesn't he? He doesn't really contribute with a lot of goals. I know he got the hat-trick in the Champions League or whatever, but ultimately, I mean, he don't score very many, does he? I mean, he's just an arch harasser.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a shame, really, because you can imagine what he'd be worth and how everyone be talking about him if he could add goals to his work rate. He's great being a Pep Guardiola player because he knits things together in and around that box. He can join in a play. Aguero is not that kind of player. Aguero's just got that big problem that he scores goals. And whatever he does, you don't see him for 90 minutes. He goes and scores that goal in the 91st minute. And we go, great player, great game.
However, as Sam said in commentary on Saturday, Jesus delivers at Christmas. And he does finally score a goal at the weekend just gone against Leicester the third. And what's interesting was that Kevin De Bruyne was desperate to set him up. There was one point where he's through on goal, just blast it in. And he tried a kind of reverse pass to Jesus so he could score. He has now got that goal. Of course, he'd scored 10 goals away from home this season. This was his first one at the Etihad Stadium. And it can be those little moments where something goes your way, something breaks your way. It's why De Bruyne was so desperate to set him up, because he's now got that goal, that thing we're all talking about. Why can't he do it at home? And that will go into away games. That will go into their next games. And I'm not sure Aguero will start in this game. I think he'll stick with Gabriel
Jesus.
So what
you're saying is that despite the fact that he had, a nine-month wait between goals at the Etihad, it's a good idea to keep faith with Jesus. Well, Aguero did score the last time that Manchester City won at Wolves. That was back in April 2012. It forms the final part of our festive fixture list on TalkSport this Friday night. Right, time for the commentator's curse. You know how it works by now. Players, we put the mockers on by giving a statistical reason as to why they will do well in this round of festive matches. What you got for me, Tom?
I've got one on Harry Kane. The Tottenham striker has scored 7 goals in just 4 Premier League games on Boxing Day. In the history of the competition, going back to 1992 when football begins, only Robbie Fowler, Alan Shearer and Robbie Keane have scored more on the 26th of December than Harry Kane. And so, don't back Harry Kane on Boxing Day.
Interestingly, because he's only scored in one of the last 5 matches when he got that double. But apart from that, he's been... I don't know whether or not Tottenham have started to use him differently or haven't managed to get him as many chances. But even watching the game on Sunday, I mean, very few opportunities he had. It was quite a surprise.
Are you saying the Pochettino has been drawn out of him and he's gone full Mourinho? Is that what you're saying? I wonder if someone else had said on the show.
I was thinking
going to rewind again. Come on, where's the other Mourinho hater? Go for it, Paul.
In Premier League history, only Andy Cole 11 goals and Thierry Henry 8 goals, have scored more Premier League goals against Liverpool than Leicester's Jamie Vardy, which is 7.
Is he going to start, though, Jamie Vardy? Because he did say he was going to get rested somewhere in the Christmas period.
That could throw up a conspiracy, couldn't it, if he doesn't play?
It'd ruin everyone's dream team, wouldn't it, if Vardy's not playing?
There's no chance you're going to rest him for a game like this. They'll rest him for the FA Cup tie, but they're not resting him for a game like this, especially the way he's scoring at the moment. Now, last week, I did big up Jamie Vardy, actually. I bigged up the impact of Colleen Rooney on Jamie Vardy and the way her intervention in Rebecca Vardy's social life actually turned Jamie Vardy's early season form on its head. And at Christmas, it's all about family, isn't it? And so I thought I'd focus on the Dele Alli brothers, or the Alley brothers, as they're known to their mum. They seem to be taking it in three-game turns for Tottenham. After Dele scored against Everton on the 3rd of November, Dele's brother came in for three games, and he played against Red Star, Sheffield United and West Ham, before the real Dele came back in after being recalled by Jose, scoring 4 goals in 3 games with Olympiacos, Bournemouth and Manchester United. Now, the other Alley has just been back for 3 matches, culminating in defeat to Chelsea. So Boxing Day is when the real Dele gets a recall again. I'm absolutely certain of it. And you know what that means? Alli will be on the score sheet again. Don't forget, the 10 games of Christmas are on TalkSport, TalkSport 2 and the TalkSport app this festive period. Download it, register, go to the live game bits at the bottom and switch between them as easily as you swipe across on Tinder. What's more, it's all free. Hey, have these 10 games on us this Christmas. Thanks for listening to the pod at this very special time. Merry Christmas to you all.
Game Day, Premier League Preview Show.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. The latest odds? We set them. Form guides? We've got them. Expert opinions? We share them. The best fans in the world deserve the best. Be match day ready before the whistle blows with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus, begambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.